there's four people per speaker here tonight. It's a good ratio. But actually, Bob had a piece. He was sitting on a wasp for first. You know, it makes sense. Shelley Hirsch and KJ Lang are performing. This is an early study for this piece. And it's, I don't know if because of its being Earth Week, there's more or less spiritualism active. We'll see. Earth Spirit. But Truth and Clouds, read by Susan Tolman, KJ Lang, Shelley Hirsch.
Cornwall and Ireland, which rear up against the westward ocean. Mists gather here, and sea fog, and eerie stories. That's not because there are more ghosts here than in other places, mind you. It's just that people who live hereabouts are strangely aware of. You see, day and night, year in, year out, they listen to the pound and stir of the waves. There's life and death in that restless sound, and eternity too. If you listen to it long enough, all your senses are sharpened. You come by strange instincts. You get to recognize a peculiar cold which is the first warning. A cold which is no mere matter of degrees Fahrenheit, but a draining of warmth from the vital centers of the living. Local people tell me they would have felt it, even outside that locked door. We didn't. They can't understand why we didn't know what it meant when our dog wouldn't go up those stairs. Animals see the blasted things that appears. Well, my sister Pamela and I knew nothing about such matters. But then we didn't. We had the disadvantage of being Londoners, just down for a fortnight's rest. That 10th day of May 1937 was the end of our holiday.
The 10th day of March, 1862, on the 10th day of March, 1862, Elizabeth Eleanor Siddle Rossetti, wife of the famous pre-Raphaelite Dante Gabriel Rossetti, took a massive overdose of laudanum and died within hours. Several things flowed from this event. One, Rossetti, in a torrent of grief, buried all of his poems in her coffin, whence, some 7 years later, he would retrieve them for publication, thereby ensuring their joint fame among sensation-seeking literati down through the generations. Two, the pre-Raphaelites, as a group, were free to forget the real Miss Siddle and to construct the ultimate ethereal femme fatale in her image. Three, my great-great-great-aunt, Anna Mary Howitt, was bereft of yet another dear friend, another sister of the heart, as she said, but she was less bereft than she might have been. Of all Lizzie Siddle's intimates, my great-aunt was the only one who regularly conversed with the dead, and was therefore in a unique position to receive and transmit messages to and from Lizzie from this state forward. Four. On the 10th day of May, 1987, was far from the relaxing holiday I had hoped. But my sister Pamela and I knew nothing of such matters. Not then we didn't. We had the disadvantage of being Londoners just down for a fortnight's rest. The house had been ours for generations, overflowing with funny old books, bits of family history, letters, memoirs. There are a couple of old board games, some ancient musical instruments, but otherwise not much to do. There's no television. And the radio reception is so awful, the audio washes in and out every time you walk by. As a matter of fact, every instrument is a field. That's where the whole thing got started. I was reading some old 19th century book on spiritual, you know, seances. She suddenly commented that it was just like spirits. I said, what is just like spirits? She said, changing with the motion of the wine glass. I pointed out to her that in a seance, she would not be moving the glass. She said she wasn't moving it. She was right.
How should all this be told? The truth of the sky, its connection to the clouds, its exceeding depth. All the sad sum of wayworn days, the phenomena of visible sunbeams are only illuminated mist. The truth of clouds, their exceeding delicacy, their number, their variety of form, great clouds of witness spirits crowd round hearts, anguish in the impenetrable maze, how ever to ascertain wherein the truth of clouds consists.
Lizzie was when first we met.
She's here, but cannot speak, don't fret. She speaks my spirit with her breath.
How should all of this be told?
Explaining from the great divine
can be so difficult. But I'm your aunt, who's gone before.
I went in 1884. I was called Anna Marie.
October 12th, 1850. Dear Mr. Rossetti, thank you for your kind gift of the Tennyson, which I found at the shop this morning when I arrived. I was so sorry to have missed you yesterday. Also, I wish to thank you for your helpful words and encouragement about my designs, though I am obliged to find you a bit extravagant in your praise. Surely no genius I, but I know you to be a person of tremendous enthusiasms, and if you will be enthusiastic about my drawings, I will only be happy. You ask if I would condescend to sit for you a picture of Dante and Beatrice in the Garden of Eden, since, as you say, I appear in your eyes to be Beatrice exactly. How odd to find your Beatrice in a plain English girl who must pin flowers on bonnets. But it is the wonder of the artist to find the poetical in the plain, and I would be glad to sit for you. This Tuesday coming would be most convenient to me, as Mondays and Wednesdays I am obliged to Mrs. Tozer. Yours, Miss Siddle.
A delicious, free, poetical life was ours.
We cared for nothing but of art,
and of the spirit of beauty that lived within.
Tucked in amongst the lands and shades like a fairy in flowers' petal stems.
Lizzie was, you know, a true creature of genius, filled with the greatness of spirit and a power of expression in everything she attempted, despite a retiring and self-absorbing nature.
Dear Gabriel, I am most sorry to say that I will not be able to come to Kew Gardens with you this Saturday as I had hoped. I have agreed to sit for Mr. Millay, who is planning a very grand picture of Ophelia, and says he will require me for quite the whole of a fortnight. I should not like to do this, but my family requires the income. I am sorry to be indelicate, but I want you to know that I should not undertake to break our appointments without good reason. And you know that I would much rather be sitting and making sketches next to you than lying in Mr. Millay's cold studio playing dead. Fondly, Lizzie.
Lizzie was his meek, unconscious doll. He wrote his sister sometimes somewhere. Oh, somewhere meek, unconscious doll! Thou sittest ranging golden hair, and glad to find thyself so fair. Poor child that waitest for thy love, and waiting waste thy life.
Hastings, April 30th, 1854. Dear Gabriel, how I do hate to be away from London and all my work and projects, which little as they are, mean so much to me. My room here, as you saw, is nicely sunny and just of a size that I may eat and draw and sleep. And I'm a merry as sure as that the sea air here will set all that ails me to rights. I do hope she is right, and that I will be back in London strong as a bullock, dropping round as usual, wrapped in my mantle of mystery, as you say, before long at all. Oh, Gabriel, I hope you will not regret having such a crazy, poetical, artistic wife, rather than a sweet angel with her hands always deep in a suet pudding instead of deep in a paint pot. How goes the Beatrice? She was looking rather torpid the last time I saw her. Is that her fault or mine, I wonder? Your set, Lizzie. I may not seem so beautiful in the photograph, as I seem when rendered by your own hand. But I am perhaps more as I truly am. Just the difference between us, I think. I should always prefer truth to beauty, where you would pick the other way round. Lizzie.
Each passage of life has its peculiar pros and its peculiar pain, to dwell in retrospect upon this pain. And upon this prose is not only unphilosophic in itself, but ungrateful toward that strange, dark, and beauty which is brooding over the world. What, darling? Oh, yes, you are right. It is fully a part of true representation of earthly life in all its quirks and devices. And yes, to falsify even for the sake of a more beautiful dream can only demean a man. A sunbeam is only illuminated.
Anna Mary sent me a poem. What this looks like!
Thank you.
tombs, that men may rise on stepping stones of your better selves to higher things.
Hastings, April 20th, 1860. Dear Gabriel, I would not want you even now, were I not reasonably persuaded by my good friends here that you would want to know my current position. I'm at Hastings once again for my health, but these feigned airs have done little for me. I have been too weak to work, which, as you know, makes me quite mad with frustration. I do not ask you to come here. I'm not able to eat, and have lost a good deal of flesh, so that I think you should not recognize me now as the girl you once called the altar of your eyes, and whose face haunts your canvases even now. Or have you painted me away? Replace that troublesome visage with one you now find more congenial. But no, I have not the strength or interest to take you to task. Your life is your own, and I am the uncaring what you do. But I am too weak to care very deeply. My life is now mine own as well, though I not perhaps be burdened with it too much longer. At least I leave behind a record of my passage and of our strange odyssey you have done. I am not so vain to think that my little drawings and poems are of any importance to the world, but they, like photographs, like these letters, will continue on in the world to show that I live, and for that I am to some degree indebted to you. Sincerely, Elizabeth Siddle.
Was taken from him by the hand of our dear Heavenly Father. What Lizzie sought in art and love, I sought for in the spirit deeps. The knowledge of a life beyond, of living life, not still sleep.
September 15th, 1860. Dear Gabriel, yes, oh yes, you must come down at once to Bath, or I up to London. But no, I cannot wait to tell you that the most extraordinary, the really most ordinary thing has happened. What would you think of a little brute to add to our menagerie? Just imagine some tiny, sweet creature crowned with red gold hair, and your two sooty smudges staring out for eyes. What a monster she shall be! The finches will flutter over her, and the puppies will lick her dear little toes, and I shall waddle about quite the respectable little mama, and you will pretend so very hard to be the stern papa. And what a grand old joke it will be! Love and more love, L.
When first I learned of that dear babe's death, I knew with a terrible certainty that Lizzie would not remain long behind. She weeps a loss forever new, a voice where heart on heart repose. Not even the knowledge that the dear sweet thing was now abiding in that great and glorious home on high could calm the terrible grief that swept Lizzie from us. Every day that brighter land seemed more real to Lizzie than the gardens of England ever were. Every day her sweet baby seemed a more longed for companion than her husband and friend. I sometimes two. Half reveal and half conceal the soul within.
Explain things can be so very awkward. It's all very well to go floating about the ether and transmigrating through walls and all. But if you want to get a message through, you've still got to deal with matter, with things that exist, with mediums of one sort or another. So imagine, you're a brawny young sea salt and you can only speak with the voice of an octogenarian spinster. Or you're a shy, soft-spoken girl whose only channel to expression is through the person of some theatrical and overbearing gentleman. But what if you cannot find a willing body at all and have to rap out your message on the underside of tables? Ever try to articulate something of burning importance by rapping? Must be frustrating as hell. That's the tragic thing about ghosts. The only reason they exist is to explain something, and they've got such inadequate means with which to do it.
Gabriel tried often in those first few years to reach her, but she did not often like to come. It was after some years that the letters began to arrive. I was sitting in the darkened room and could not see what my hand began to write. We
Beatrice. She was looking rather torpid the last I saw her. Is that her fault or mine, I wonder?
And Rossetti made Beatrice immortal. He painted the great Beata Beatrix, rendering death as a trance in which Beatrice is wrapped from earth to heaven. He wrote, inexplicably stiff for some time. We returned to our old routines, me with my nose in some book, Pamela with her head in the clouds. The radio reception improved markedly. Some days later, I chanced upon the same old book I'd been reading again, and discovered, folded up amongst its pages, a letter in what I have come to recognize as my grandmother's handwriting. Dear Annie, thank you so much for your letter and for informing me of your latest phenomenon, though I must admit I cannot muster either your faith or your enthusiasm for communication with the so-called departed. But at your suggestion, I've been to the National Gallery to see the great Beata Beatrix. When I look at her, I do feel puzzled by the way in which the artist took the head and features of a remarkably retiring English girl with whom I was perfectly familiar, and transfused them with an expression in which I could recognize nothing of the moral nature of Miss Siddle, who actually had the look of one who read her Bible and said her prayers every night, which she probably did. I wonder what she would think if she knew.